Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. I'm your host, John Peters, and I'm joined by Kyle McKelvey. This week on the podcast, we're taking a look back at Week 13's best games, releasing a brand new top 50, talking RPI cancellations, and looking ahead at the finish line for conference races. Let's talk college baseball. What's up, Kyle? How's it going?
Pretty good. Had a nice relaxing weekend camping glamping in West Texas this week with my wife for her birthday. So happy birthday to Juliet.
Happy birthday, Juliet. Glamping. What does that look like for you guys?
Well, it was essentially camping, except we had an air conditioned cabin that had a bed and a shower. So it's basically camping just with AC is my opinion.
That doesn't sound like camping. That sounds like renting a cabin.
Yeah, but then we like hiked and stuff at the park and sat outside and cooked food on the grill and stuff like that. So it was camping except for sleeping. She's also pregnant. Like, I mean, come on, you gotta give her a little bit here.
I am totally fine with the fact that you guys didn't go camping, but staying a couple nights in a cabin, that is not even
it was up. I wouldn't even call it a cabin. It was just like a roof that had, because it was all one room. Like essentially like a luxury studio apartment in San Francisco. It was just one room with a bed.
All right. I'm being swayed a little bit. If it's just one room, that does feel a little. We did have a bathroom. Did it have running water?
It had a bathroom, yes. But we ended up having to use the public restrooms right next door also. So
you're losing me a little. Anytime it has its own bathroom.
Well, yeah.
All right.
That's why I said glamping.
All right, yeah, I'm reasonably convinced, but good to have you back on in civilized lands then.
Yep.
So Kyle, in between glamping and your regular day job, what was the best thing that you saw last week in college baseball?
The best thing that I saw was not specifically related to college baseball, but it happened at the Arkansas-Vanderbilt game Saturday night. There was a raccoon that somehow made its way into the outfield stands. And yeah, that, I mean, if you were on Twitter at all on Saturday night, I think that was Saturday night. No, that was Friday night.
Might have been Friday, yeah.
Yeah, that was Friday night. If you were on Twitter at all, you saw this because it was the talk of college baseball. It's something that, like, without telling where this took place, you could probably guess like one of three schools, like Arkansas, LSU, or one of the Mississippi schools, I guess. But yeah, this is so perfect because, I mean, if you didn't see the video, we'll tweet it out. But one fan just picked up the raccoon by the scruff of its neck, like a mother cat, or like getting its kittens, and the raccoon did not like it. It was fighting it the whole way, and then he just resigned to his life, and they carried it all the way out of the stadium, I'm assuming, with beer in hand. It was great.
The last update I heard on that was that he ended up getting bit and had to get a bunch of rabies shots the next day. That's where I left the story off. I haven't confirmed that, but apparently they didn't allow him re-entry either because he just got bit by a raccoon.
That's hilarious. Oh man. Yeah, wow. I saw it, like, made some contact with him, but I didn't actually know.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, and it was a rally raccoon for Arkansas because that was the only game of that series that they won. So bring back the raccoon.
Yeah, it's like the possum at LSU from a few years ago. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes, rally possum.
Yep.
So I was going to do three things to the best thing I saw last week. You just took one of them because that's obviously one of the best things that happened in college baseball last week. I've got two more, one small one. On Twitter, I read someone who replied to somebody else's opinion with, quote, "I can respect that point of view," which is the first time I've ever seen civilized discourse on Twitter. So that makes an honorable mention for best things I saw last week.
That's impressive.
But I think the thing that, like, single-handedly most impressive thing that I saw last week was Oklahoma State slugger Griffin Dorshing hit a 513-foot home run. Like, cleared everything. Cleared, like, the massive scoreboard in left field. It was a absolute rocket.
Yeah. I think the commentator is like, it landed in Kansas.
Yeah, it was a good call. That was a great call. Also, I feel like I've thought about him a lot, but I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast. Like Griffin Dorsching, like, I can't be the only one that hears Gryffindor right there, right? Like his name is like a Harry Potter house. And like every time I hear his name, I think his name is Gryffindor.
Gryffindor Shing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I showed that video to my wife this weekend and she was like, oh my God, is he on steroids? He looks like a baseball player from the 90s. It looks just like, he looks totally jacked.
Yeah, is he like, I think 6'7". I can't remember. He's huge. God. He's just a big
Yeah.
Point of order, was this with your glamping cabin, which presumably had Wi-Fi?
We had service where we were, and it did have Wi-Fi, but it didn't work. So I would say that it didn't have Wi-Fi.
All right.
Yeah, we were only like an hour west of San Antonio. There's plenty of service out there.
Yeah, you're losing credibility in my mind.
That's fine.
So best thing we saw last week there. Next up on the podcast, let's take a look at our brand new top 50. And not a lot of change. I mean, the very top, it's been 8 straight weeks now with Tennessee number one. Virginia Tech slides up to number two. Let's take a pause there really quick. I think I felt a little conflicted about what to do with Oregon State. We had Oregon State at two. They lost a series at Arizona. Did any part of you think about leaving Oregon State at number two? They're still winning the Pac-12. They've only lost two series, one to Stanford, one to on the road at Arizona. I mean, it's still pretty solid resume all around,
yeah.
But we had Virginia Tech pass them at number two and Stanford pass them at number three. I feel a little more compelled by Stanford passing them because Stanford did win that series at Oregon State. So I want to pause there. There's our top four. Did you think anything about leaving Oregon State at number two?
I thought about it. What Virginia Tech's done in arguably a tougher conference. I guess it's not arguably. They have the highest RPI. And winning that series at home against Louisville this week, going on the road, beat Virginia. Like they have the resume.
Miami.
They have that Miami series.
Virginia Tech has some really nice series wins.
They definitely have the resume. And Oregon State lost and Virginia Tech didn't. So just by poll metrics, I think that's fine, but it's maybe like a power ranking kind of a thing, but overall resume, it's or like team talent and stuff. It's hard to pick between the two. Oregon State is clearly very talented and they have a really good resume, but losing on the road. Yeah. That'll push it down.
Yeah. I think I think about four different things. When I think about poll rankings, I think about the eye test and that kind of includes things like talent. I think about their resume. They're also how hot they've been lately. And how we might project them moving forward, like things that might include injury or development throughout the season. And obviously the later you go in the season, the less projection you do, the more resume becomes important. But like there is like an important question of like, how much do you weight week one series at this point in the season? Probably less than you weight the week 12 13 series, right? Like these teams are different than they were a couple of months ago. So polls are challenging. And I think that Virginia Tech is a really solid choice at number two. I think there's a few other teams there that have a case. Let's keep moving. Number five, Virginia. We have Texas A&M up to number six, followed by Gonzaga, Notre Dame, Miami, and Texas Tech rounding out the top 10. A little bit more action. Just one team moving into the top 25 this week. It's Arizona re-entering. We had four teams enter into the top 50. East Carolina at 40, Ole Miss at 41. And then the bottom two, Southern Illinois and College of Charleston at 49 and 50, and Campbell at 48. We had five teams enter into the top 50 this week. Anything else stand out to you in the rest of the top 50?
I was pretty impressed with Texas State. We didn't move them up at all because of things that happened around them, but they ended up sweeping Louisiana at home this week, dropping Louisiana almost out of our top 50 and maybe out, we'll discuss this later this week, but maybe out of bubble consideration for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're close.
Yeah. It became a lot messier for Louisiana for sure.
Yeah. I don't exactly know what their RPI is at the moment, like maybe 50s something.
Yeah. It's hovering in the low 40s, upper
56. 50s. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not looking great, but I mean, they'll still be in the conversation. I like that. I like that call with Texas State. They're struggling to get that RPI up there, but They've had some nice series wins. Obviously, that series win at Arizona looks now a little bit better now that Arizona just knocked off Oregon State. I think it's always nice when teams that you beat, you can point to another team that's, you know, likely going to be a tournament team that you have a series road, not the win, series win on the road. That's always nice. So, I like that. Texas State had a pretty nice week right there. I want to now move on to a little bit talking about what happened with the week 13 pick'em. And this was a big week. This is the penultimate week in the College Baseball Nation power ranking pick'em. And you had an extra 4 points on the table because we had that series split from 2 weeks ago, Wake Forest, Louisville. So you had a little bit of a chance to catch up, and you did catch up a little.
1 point.
1 point, but I'm holding on to a 79-75 point lead right now.
Yep. I went 3-for-3-2 this week. I hit one.
A winning weekend. That's never bad in college baseball.
But I wanted that one loss to be one of my, like my one pointer or something, and not my second 4 pointer. So that was a little inconvenient.
Yeah, let's talk about the series. We've already referenced it a little bit. That Oregon State at Arizona series. You were pretty confident in the Beavs heading into that weekend.
I sure was.
Yeah. End of story.
They let me down. Yeah. Derby got roughed up a little bit after 4 1/3, but the Beavers still got the win there. And so like that was a little bit surprising, but they had to use a few more bullpen pitches than I thought they would.
And that's definitely not Oregon State's strength. They don't have a ton of depth in the bullpen.
Yeah. And then game two, Arizona just shut them down. They had two pitchers. They used two pitchers that in that game and saved the rest for Sunday if they needed it. But Garrett Irvin shut them down for one earned run and 9 strikeouts in those 7 innings. And then, I don't know. I fully expected Oregon State to go on the road and do it. It was a little bit unconventional Oregon State baseball, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Arizona, I think, typically has had a fairly strong home field advantage. I think Nick Corbett plays fairly small. And so the fact that game one, they had 21 combined runs, game three had 15 combined runs, didn't exactly shock me. And I don't look at this, I personally don't look at this as a huge red flag for Oregon State.
No, probably not. They'll play at places like, they're going to play at home in the postseason. So yeah, that'll help them.
And I think that, I think this next weekend series where they host UCLA is actually going to be a really great way to finish the year. UCLA is a 33-win team, so it's going to be solid shape for their RPI. They don't have any worries, really. Like, no matter what they do, they're going to stay in the top 8 in the RPI. They're going to be 1 or 2 probably in the Pac-12, pending a few things. This feels just like a really great series to play some quality competition at home, get geared up for the postseason, bounce back. And are you like, I am a believer that like as a coach, it's a little easier to motivate a team coming off a loss where you can get that chip on your player's shoulders. You can get that mentality of you're the underdog. Like it's really hard to convince someone that they're an underdog if the last time they lost a series was April 3rd. Like, like Oregon State hadn't lost a series in 6 weeks. And like, I'm not going to go out and preach and say that like every team should try to throw a series at the end of the year, but I'm saying it can be a good coaching tool. And I think that this, I would fully expect Oregon State to bounce back against UCLA.
Yeah, I agree entirely. It's a little bit, I guess, concerning if this Arizona win over them is to say anything, because the Pac-12 tournament is in Scottsdale. So like similar, I don't know, similar feel maybe for how this is going to go. Unless, is that indoors? I don't know.
No, it's outdoors. And Oregon State does have that one advantage of the fact that they play a lot of games at the beginning of the year in Scottsdale. They do the Sanderson Classic. So they actually, nice. They play, no, it's not true. They play in Surprise, but nearby.
Similar feel, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so Oregon State's no stranger to the state of Arizona. But yeah, that's a good point. I think when that series at home against UCLA go to this somewhat neutral site Pac-12 tournament, as long as Oregon State can, stay above 500 in that stretch, they should feel pretty good about the fact that the next couple weekends of postseason play would probably all be in Corvallis.
Yep. So my next series that I had a four-pointer, I won this one. It was I picked Virginia Tech. They beat Louisville. Louisville got game one in that after a pretty surprising, like they just kind of blew it open in the eighth and ninth innings, but it was pretty close for a while, for six innings in there. And then Virginia Tech came in and did what Virginia Tech does. They just played tough baseball and scored runs when they needed to, and they won the next two. And that was pretty impressive. That's exactly what we needed to see to bump them up to number two, and for their postseason hopes to stay alive for maybe number two overall national seed. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, this is the highest Virginia Tech has ever been ranked in the College Baseball Nation poll. And I think that's true for a lot of polls out there, that they're reaching record highs. Absolutely wild, predicted by the coaches to finish last in their division. Yeah. And now look almost a lock for a national top eight national seed. So
national coach of the year, maybe.
That'll be an interesting debate. Maybe that's a debate we can have in the next couple of weeks. Our most recent SEC piece makes a case for Jim Schlossnagle being SEC coach of the year in the SEC, not necessarily national coach of the year. Mm-hmm. And I still think Tony Vitello probably would be my favorite.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that, you know, the last time I thought about this and made that statement was a few weeks ago. And since then, A&M's won every single series since, you know, I guess Tennessee's only dropped one series since then. But I think that if Schloss can win the SEC West, maybe make a run in the SEC tournament, you know, I start seeing a case for Schloss to be SEC Coach of the Year and should be in the conversation for National Coach of the Year as well. There's probably a lot to unpack there. A lot of great coaching performances around the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else stands out to you? You got a few more series on your docket.
Yeah, next, I got Georgia Southern right. They went on the road to Little Rock and won that series. Game three, Warren Nolan is actually wrong on this. They have their score off, so maybe Warren Nolan is not as perfect as I thought it was going to be.
There's a couple glitches this weekend.
Yeah, maybe weather messed up their servers. I don't know. But it was only like by two runs, and it was in the top of the seventh, and then Mother Nature cut that game short. But yeah, they went out and did handled business, won two out of three at Little Rock, which is a low RPI team, but their RPI still stayed up pretty high. Next for me, my two-pointer, I lost Miami going on the road to Florida State. I picked Miami in that one. Florida State won that one, and that was one that I didn't see coming. Like game, it kind of went a way that we weren't expecting. Miami roughed up Parker Messick in game one, and then Florida State still won that series.
If you told me going into that Parker Messick was going to have one of his worst starts on the year, I would have put a good amount of money on Miami winning that series then. And yeah, that's not what happened.
Yeah, just taking one of the next two maybe, but no.
Yeah.
Hubbard came out and shut the Canes down the next day over five innings, and only let up one earned run, two walks, 10 strikeouts. And they just kind of did their own thing. The Canes started a little bit in the fifth in that game too, but kind of shut them down after that. And then game three was, I don't know, back and forth, I guess. Only one pitcher went more than four innings between the nine pitchers used in both teams. So that was kind of cool.
I know that like all around the East Coast, weather caused issues in terms of like when games started. Like I think Miami, Florida State played a doubleheader, and there was just some like, I think, really difficult bullpen strategies that had to be played out across the country, trying to figure out how to keep guys from injuring themselves at this point in the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the last one, South Carolina took down visiting Kentucky, two out of three. And there's my 8 points.
I think I want to take a look into this, because last time I checked about South Carolina, their home road split was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous.
21-11 at home, and they're 3-12 on the road.
Wow. I saw this earlier too, but Mizzou was in SEC play with 0-12 on the road. Like every time, all four series they've been on the road, they've been swept. That was just one that I saw.
And then meanwhile, you have a team like what, Ole Miss, who was started off SEC play at home 0-6. They got swept by Tennessee and Alabama, and now they're sitting at 13-14. So you can a little bit of everything there. It helps when you sweep at LSU, like the Rebs just did this past weekend. And we aren't going to talk about them too much, but man, Ole Miss looked just totally dead, totally out. What they were at 7-13 or something like that in conference play. Don't check my math, but now they're 13-14. So there's one game below 500, number 38 RPI. Ole Miss has had a real turnaround. We'll see if Bianco is securing his job for one more season with this late season push.
What about your picks?
Yeah. So let's take a quick run through. So I picked Wake Forest over North Carolina, and I think that probably puts me now my winning percentage at like 12% on the year in ACC series because I got that one wrong. Both of these teams now are in really interesting places on the bubble with their high RPIs and sub 500 conference records. So it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. That was just my two-pointer. I also whiffed on my one-pointer, Washington at Southern California, which I wish I'd gotten to the spreadsheet before I had you forced me to pick that series. I definitely would have deleted it because it was too hard to pick. Who knew what was going to happen there? But Washington swept Southern Cal.
Yeah, I had a plan last week.
Yeah, you came in hyper-prepared, and it only got you one extra point. Let's talk about the two that I got. Right now, I got my four-pointer and three-pointer right, so That's what helped me out here. So I got Coastal over Troy. We've already talked about A&M being one of the highest teams in the country. Coastal Carolina has to also be up there to be considered in that conversation for hottest teams in the country. Coastal is now 33-16 and asterisks on the year. They have one tie. They have a 7-game winning streak. 8-2 over their last 10. They got 7 Q1 wins, 12 Q2 wins. They're 14-10 on the road, 5 non-conference strength of schedule, 31 RPI. I mean, all of these things, just like these stats are just great. Like these are a really great stats for a mid-major team. This is like a really strong 2-seed, maybe 3-seed if they slip up. But like, this is just a team that has really situated itself to almost, I think at this point, almost a lock in the postseason after they had some early season struggles, getting swept at UNC losing that series at Texas State and getting swept by Georgia State. I mean, really since that Georgia State sweep, and that sweep was finished April 10th, they have only lost 3 games. So losing 3 games in over a month, that's a pretty nice stretch.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a chance to mess up Clemson too, and when Clemson tries to make a late surge for postseason, they play this week in Conway, so it'd be fun.
And so far, as far as I know, that game has not been canceled due to RPI concerns, which we will get to in just a minute. The other one I got right was Florida at Missouri. Florida is making its push to a potential host bid. There might be too many SEC teams ahead of them in the pecking order, but they're at 13-14 now in the conference. They won 2 out of 3 this last weekend at Missouri. One game won in blowout fashion, 13-1. Lost game 2, 3-5. And pulled out a one-run victory in game 3, 4-3 to clinch that series. They have Florida State in the midweek and then host South Carolina, which is a guaranteed 3 wins because of
Carolina. Because it's on the road. Yep.
So, 16-14, maybe Florida in conference play. Will at least be on the committee's radar when it comes to picking hosts.
Because of RPI, pretty much.
I mean, 2 games above 500 in the SEC play and an RPI that's probably going to be in the top 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make a run in the SEC tournament and they're hosting.
Yeah, that's true. They're on the bubble consideration for that.
Yeah. So all in all, not a bad weekend for me. The power ranking aspect of this, the confidence points is what's really keeping me in this. I think you have a 1.5 game lead on me in the overall standings.
I think that's right.
But I have that 4-point lead, which is the thing that actually matters.
Darn you.
So that wraps up this week's recap of the Pick'em. Take a listen on Wednesday when our podcast comes out to hear all of our picks from week 14. Kyle, a few more topics that I want to touch on. And I want to talk about RPI. I don't want to talk about RPI, but I feel like we have to talk about RPI.
Banish it.
The controversy surrounding RPI has been, I mean, I like to think that we've played some small role in raising awareness about RPI, because every other weekend I tweet about how stupid the RPI is. And I think we're finally getting some big time exposure. It started with, most publicly, Jim Schlossnagel canceling A&M's midweek game.
That was the biggest, highest profile one. I think there were others though.
Yeah, that was kind of the one that, like, he was the first one. So that was against Incarnate Word. He explicitly said, we don't want it to hurt our RPI.
Yeah.
And it kind of opened up floodgates. It had people look back at, like, Virginia Tech canceled a game against Marshall because it had rained the day before. And I was like, okay, is that big a
deal? Overnight rain. They have turf.
Yeah, and then Notre Dame had that series at William & Mary, which I am a little conflicted on, because I don't think that series actually would have hurt their RPI that much, but I don't know. For like, that hasn't been confirmed. Virginia and Mount St. Mary's, Texas State has come out, TCU, I believe.
Yeah, and Texas State and TCU just this week.
Ole Miss, Liberty, so several teams are coming out. And the language that most of these teams are using is, like, mutually agreed upon by head coaches. But, like, the writing's on the wall. Like, it's pretty clear what they mean by that.
Yeah, and they also cite, like, travel issues, right? Like,
yeah. We don't want to travel there because even winning will hurt us.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's your take, Kyle? Good, bad, reasonable, bad for the teams? They're, like, give me your take on this.
I think I tweeted this the other day. I fully understand teams doing this. It is exposing RPI as a dumb metric, and a dumb metric for heavily relying on as a committee. It is fine to determine the rough strength of a team. I think it needs a little bit of tweaking, I think. It's not soft. It's not like, it's not, I don't know. I've seen that a lot. People saying, oh, play the games that you're scheduled, that you schedule. And if you don't like them, don't schedule them. There's, for teams in the state of Texas and Florida and like with a lot of good colleges around the area, for good teams around the area, you have to, like, schedule all of them all over, because it's local and you're not going to schedule others in the midweek. You can't, like, A&M can't schedule Texas 9 times in the midweek in the whole season. And TCU can't schedule like Baylor all the time in the midweek. Cause I don't know.
Yeah.
Bad example, but there's teams to play and you're going to have to spread out the love. And I don't know. I think it's fine what they're doing, essentially.
So is it good for college baseball? Bad for college baseball? Neutral?
I think it is good. It will be good in the long run because it will exposes RPI for what it is.
All right.
I like what you tweeted though. How with the let's see if I can find it. You have a bunch of options to fix the RPI.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a stance saying that I think this is bad for college baseball. I agree it's good in the long run. I think anytime you cancel games at the end of the season for a metric that a lot of Pitt fans, like, don't really spend a lot of time thinking about and, like, learning about, it's bad for college baseball. Like, the saying goes, like, every baseball game is somebody's first baseball game. And, like, the fans who bought tickets, who thought they were going to be able to go to that midweek game against Incarnate, where there could be some kid there who was just super excited to see the Aggies play or the Cardinals play. And, like, that's, like, canceling baseball games is bad for the sport. I agree, though. It does expose a flawed system. And I like that it's getting pressed that way. But I feel I am not a fan of the games being canceled.
I think it could be, it looks bad kind of on the surface, but yeah, like if you dig into it a little bit, it's a good way, like, to expose or to, like, drop some of those games that will just dropping your RPI or that, like, yeah, it'll drop your RPI even if you win, which it doesn't seem like that should be how this works, especially for a metric that the committee, like, heavily uses.
Yep. Yep. I love how, I think it was a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, we were like joking about how some of these teams should cancel games at the end of the season. Like, totally joking, like, no, there's no way, like, they can't do that. And then they do.
Yeah.
So if there's any head coaches listening to this, please don't take advice from us. Hopefully that wasn't seen as a form of advice.
No, hopefully it was. I think it's good.
But I think I hope to see this as a thing that motivates change. So yeah, I did tweet out a few ideas about how to improve RPI. And I think college hockey actually is a really good model for that. And a few people tweeted at us about how college hockey has a different form of RPI. And that was thanks to all of y'all who shared some of that insight. But I think one thing that college hockey does well is if a game hurts your RPI, even if you win it, it drops it from your RPI. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense at like the intuitive level of like, don't punish a team for winning a game.
Yeah. And that also incentivizes to playing a game, right?
Yeah, at least it removes the major disincentive from playing that game. I think another thing that needs to be thought about a little bit is the formula for the RPI. Because like right now, half the formula is your strength of schedule. And I don't know if that is what is best for the game. Like only a quarter of RPI is whether or not you actually win or lose games. And it feels to me that that's too low. Like we need to incentivize winning and losing a little bit more if we're trying to determine how good teams are. Right now, 75% of the RPI is basically your strength of schedule or some reflection of your opponent's strength of schedule. So it's kind of like a composite strength of schedule metric. That's great. Like we want to make sure that you get credit for winning against good teams. That weight feels a little bit off. So let's reward winning games.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, you have like a team like Dallas Baptist at number 6 in the RPI, and they are a good team, sure, but they're just being buoyed by a lot of other games that they've played. Like they're 12-9 Q1, and maybe they're a good team, but I don't think they're a better team than the team right below them, Georgia, or two below them, Miami. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the thing that I took out of perusing the RPI and RPI quadrant results over the weekend was one of the biggest predictors about teams at the top of the RPI is not exactly wins or losses. It's how many games they've played in Q4. It's not even mm-hmm. how many losses they have in Q4. It's just how many Q4 teams they played. And you can like look at a team like a Texas State, which is 20-2 against Q4. They played 22 Q4 games. That is a lot of Q4 games to play. They've won 41 games overall, and they're at 500 in Q1 games. I mean, you look at teams above them, Southern Miss, Wake Forest are 10 spots ahead of them. They're both 4 games below 500 in Q1 games. Florida's 7 games below 500 in Q1 games, and they're 16. Oklahoma State is 11-13 in Q1 games. You know, like if you look at many, many teams ahead of Texas State, they're worse than them in Q1, which feels like a meaningful quadrant to look at when you're thinking about the postseason, because most of those teams are Q1 teams. And Texas State is just getting murdered in the RPI because they played 22 Q4 games. And I get it. That's not a great strength of schedule. But, like, I mean, they've won a lot of their important games, and they should be getting some credit for that. Meanwhile, Florida, having lost, you know, two-thirds of their Q1 games, maybe shouldn't be at number 16 in the RPI.
Yeah. And then you got a team like Maryland, number 10 in the RPI, with 22 also, 19-3. But a ton of Q2 games, because that's just kind of where the Big Ten is right now. And they're all sitting there right there, and that's who they play. So they can't really control that unless you just schedule better. But it's hard for Northern teams, and I guess Maryland might be considered a Northern team.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. Most of the teams they play are in that sort of teams that consider cold weather, which is the the realm of Northern, I think, in the college baseball world, at least.
Yep. Well, did we fix RPI?
We fixed it. We don't even need to be credited, NCAA committee. Like,
just send this directly to Indianapolis.
Yeah. I think if memory serves me correct, this is a rule change year. They do every other year in college baseball.
Cool.
I can't remember. So hopefully there's at least some conversation around it this offseason. Especially some of these small things to tinker with the RPI itself. I feel like those changes could be made. And I think you could get some consensus around it. Like, I think you get some support from coaches, because like coaches don't want to cancel a game. Like none of these coaches are like, oh yeah, we got to avoid a chance to like play some baseball. Like, no, like everyone wants to play the games, but like if it, like at the end of the day, if you're a head coach and you have a chance of hosting, like your duty to your team and your fans is to give them the best chance of winning a national championship. And that, you know, hosting is a big part of that. So
yeah, I saw a few fans with season tickets tweeting like, what's wrong with, like, you got to look out for your season ticket holders. And they're saying that someone else was like, well, if you just give us like free ice cream, that maybe help us forget about this cancel game.
All right. Either change the RPI or give everyone ice cream. Yep. Those are the two options.
I'd be down with that. That's fine.
All right, Kyle, let's wrap up the podcast with a little bit of conference champ talk, because these races at the end of the year, I think, are tighter than I would have thought. I don't know. I feel like every year it's easy to say like, oh my gosh, this is the tightness it's been. But like, except for the SEC East, all the major conferences have meaningful conference races at the end of the year. And I want to start with the Big 12, which is perhaps the most convoluted, maybe that's not the right word. And honestly, it's all the Red Raiders' fault because Texas Tech went into Stillwater and swept Oklahoma State. That was
messed everything up.
Came out of left field. That was, first of all, absolutely wild series. We mentioned the Griffin Dorsching 5,000 foot home run, but that game one, that same game that home run was hit in, ended with Texas Tech winning by one run and Oklahoma State getting caught in a rundown between third base and home to end the game. So yeah. Like, I mean, that series was just incredibly entertaining. Particularly if you're a Texas Tech fan. But the implications of that series are broader than just what happened there that weekend, because Texas Tech obviously surged in the conference standings, surpassing Oklahoma State, who they now hold a one-game lead on. But TCU is still in first place, and they've actually finished conference play. They are a half game ahead of Texas Tech, but only one Texas Tech has one fewer loss than TCU. And so Texas Tech actually has the fewest conference losses in the conference. So Texas Tech is the only team that controls its own destiny. If they sweep to end the year, they will win the Big 12. If they don't, there are a ton of scenarios that can play out.
Yeah, oh boy.
They're like obviously at 16-8, if Texas Tech just wins that series, 2 out of 3, they would be tied with TCU. You have Oklahoma State at 13-8, which could end up with 16 wins. Texas Tech plays Oklahoma, so obviously if Texas Tech wins that series, Oklahoma at 13-8 will not be able to catch up to them. But there are, I saw the permutations for how all these different teams can win a share of the Big 12 title. And it's a lot. There's a lot going on here. And I have a question. How important in your mind is winning the Big 12 regular season this year?
You mean for like hosting discussion?
I think that's where it makes the most sense to talk about, because I don't know, I don't have a good feel for the host situation right now in the Big 12.
Yeah, me neither. We were going through separately our top 16 seeds for the podcast later this week. And I saw you moving around all those, the Big 12 teams right there. And I didn't know what to do with them either, but I think best bet to wait until the end of the season. That's the lazy way to go.
Yeah. Our projection is going to be once we have all the results.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I think it's an interesting thing is that Texas has one of the second best RPI in the conference, but they're in fifth place right now. Mm-hmm. They have a chance to sweep Kansas and get 14 Big 12 wins, which is likely going to put them top 3 or 4, but they don't have a chance of winning the conference. TCU, Texas Tech right now in first and second place have RPIs of 36 and 13. My instinct is that if either of them wins the regular season, they would have a decent shot at hosting, even if their RPI is in the 20s or 30s.
Oh, interesting. I didn't think about, yeah, I guess with 16 wins in conference and in the RPI number 3 conference, I think 4.
Yeah. Number 3 right now.
That's true. Right now, Oklahoma State to me has the best argument for hosting out of those, but man, I don't know. They just got swept and it changes a lot of things. It's hard to, I don't know.
Yeah.
To balance all that.
It is. It's really tough. Because right now, just based off of resume, not recency bias, it feels like Oklahoma State has the best resume, but they're not going to win the conference
probably
necessarily.
Yeah.
And is it weird to have them be a host and have them be the only Big 12 host? I can imagine a scenario where TCU wins the regular season, Texas Tech wins the conference tournament. Maybe you get 3 hosts from the Big 12 all of a sudden. If you get a little bit of RPI magic to go with some, you know, couple of Big 12 championships spread around a little bit. But I think the stakes at the last, like in the last 2 weeks of the Big 12 are probably the highest of any of the major conferences right now.
Yeah, I think it'll determine at least two of those host spots and push some other bubble teams out possibly. Like if Oklahoma State sweeps, they'll be at least tied for second in the Big 12. And I think that would be enough to be somewhere in the 12 to 16 range probably.
Yeah.
So let's noise. Yeah.
Let's have this conversation again, but now I'll turn to the SEC West, because I think a very similar story plays out in the SEC West.
True.
Or let's go 1-2-3 in the West. Arkansas A&M tied atop the SEC West with A&M, the tiebreaker, and Auburn at number three, just 1.5 games back. Really feels like they got robbed of a chance to be one game back because their game with Alabama got called a no contest due to weather, but that's neither here nor there. But Auburn is at number four in the RPI, and that feels like another situation where winning that division, you're probably going to host.
Yeah.
Can Auburn get pushed out of hosting if they finish third? I mean, Arkansas has the head-to-head over Auburn. Again, this feels like another division, another conference, where your placement in the division is going to be very important for your placement in the postseason.
Yeah, and I guess we'll really see this year how heavily RPI, because every committee is a little bit different, like how much this committee favors RPI, because Auburn is, like you said, fourth in the RPI, but third in their own division. So I don't know. That will be really interesting to see, because especially if A&M and Arkansas both finish tied, they'll have the head-to-head over one and then lost in the head-to-head to the other. So I don't know. It's tricky.
It's going to be messy. That's the summary. And I think that it was Kendall Rogers said this best just earlier this week. And that's the fact that, like, if there was any year that the committee was not going to rely on RPI, it was going to be last year, because the RPI was messed up because some teams didn't do non-conference play and stuff like that. But if you look at how teams were seeded, it was basically purely RPI. So, like, when given the chance to demonstrate that the committee could go away from RPI, they absolutely did not do that.
Yeah. Does that mean Auburn's going to be the fourth overall seed?
It sure could.
Yeah.
All right. The last conference I want to talk about here is just a this or that. It's a give me a Pac-12 winner, this or that. Let's do Oregon State or Stanford. And right now they both have one series left. Oregon State has the one game lead, but Stanford has the tiebreaker. Oregon State and Stanford are both hosting in the last week of the season, so they both have home series against teams that they should probably be fairly favored against. Stanford gets USC, and Oregon State gets UCLA. Who you got?
Give me Oregon State here. I just because they're that one game advantage, I think both teams could go 2 out of 3. And that would be status quo. I'd pick Stanford to sweep that series if they could. So I don't know. It'd be close. The tiebreaker would be a little bit different. But we have finally a Pac-12 tournament to sort things out.
Yeah.
What about you? What would you pick?
So Stanford's won 6 straight Pac-12 games. So that's they're streaking right now. It's without a doubt. And USC is streaking on their own, right? But in the downward swing, they have lost, a lot of Pac-12 games. I mean, they're 8-19, but they've gotten swept by Washington. They've lost 2-3 to Utah. They've gotten swept by Arizona State, Oregon State. I mean,
Arizona.
Yeah, the Arizona and UCLA are some very big head scratchers there in terms of series wins. I agree. I think Stanford has a better odds of sweeping, because I think UCLA is a much better team than USC, but I don't think I would put money on it. I think most likely they each win the series and Oregon State gets the edge.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle. Well, this is the last Monday podcast we have of the regular season.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that this is, it's crazy. This time next week, we're going to be at the start of conference play. And we have now made it. Conference tournament play. And we have not officially announced, but we will both be attending the SEC baseball tournament for the first time. So we have a lot of on-the-ground coverage at the SEC baseball tournament coming for you guys. And it's going to be an absolute blast. My first time in Hoover.
Mine too. Yeah, it'll be good to see you after for the first time since my wedding. You've been in Boston this whole time. And yeah, it'll be we could maybe do a midweek podcast in person.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Oh, yeah. Some in-person action. Maybe maybe from Hoover Metropolitan Stadium.
Yeah. Maybe with some guests, we can try and find some players and other bloggers and stuff. We'll see.
It's going to be a blast. All right. That's all for us for this podcast. Be sure to check out the Bracketology podcast coming out later this week. Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. Be sure to rate and review the podcast on wherever you're listening to this podcast. It helps us get the word out. Head over to our social media at CollegeBallNat. We're on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to check out our website, collegebaseball.info. Have a great week.